couple weeks ago, last time I was up here, a question was brought up, and I purposely did not answer it. I told the individual who brought the question up, so this is beyond the scope of discussion today. That was 2 weeks ago. My intention was to not answer it then, which I'm going to attempt to explain it today. This is a rather difficult topic for me to talk about because the Bible is not as clear as I would like it to be. But the question was brought up, so I'm going to answer it as best I can. We'll open with a prayer if you don't mind. Almighty God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we ask for your blessing today. Let your words flow. Let your spirit flow. That we may see and understand and obey. Help us to follow your will, God, and not our own. We ask for your compassion and your understanding and your blessing. In your son we pray, Yeshua HaMashiach. Amen. I don't need a reader today because I'm only covering, you know, three verses. actually, we're covering quite a few verses, but just three in 2 Samuel 15. I've been covering 2 Samuel 15 for I don't know how many weeks now. It's been a long time, but it's a very complicated chapter. So it's fair to spend some time covering it. 2 weeks ago, we read through part of, actually, 4 weeks ago, we read through this whole chapter, but 2 weeks ago, we discussed it a little further. Granted, most of you weren't here, but that's okay. A few of you who were. And the few of you who were here, a question was brought up that had noted events that were occurring in this verse. This is 2 Samuel 15, starting in verse 30. So David went up by the ascent of the Mount of Olives, and wept as he went up. And he had his head covered, and went barefoot. And all the people who were with him covered their heads and went up, weeping as they went. Then someone told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Now it happened when David had come to the top of the mountain, where he worshipped God, that there was Hushai, the Archite, coming to meet him, with his robe torn and dust on his head. The question was brought up, is that David had covered his head, and all the people covered his head, weeping. What does that mean? To cover one's head and weep. An act of mourning, act of upsetness, disappointment. Well, most terms and most events, the Bible will attempt to define it itself. It makes it much easier on the rest of us trying to find the answers. The answers are usually in there somewhere. It may not be quite as convenient or as you would desire to show up, but it does show up. This event that we just read in 2 Samuel 15, chapter 15, shows a man and obviously all the women and men who were with him covering their heads crying. They were mourning. Mourning what? Was someone dead? Were they mourning a loss of a relative?
Mourning David's loss of his kingship.
And in a manner of speaking, loss of his son. In a different way of speaking it. Because his son took over his own kingship. So they were mourning the loss of David as their king. Yet all these individuals still treated and acted and functioned as if David still and remained their king. So they weren't actually mourning their own personal loss of him being their king, but they were mourning on his behalf because he lost the kingship.
They also probably knew maybe David's great affection for Absalom.
You're right.
He loved that son.
He loved that boy. You're absolutely right. That would be a great loss to a father to have his own son rebel in such a great fashion. So I have a question for you. Is the act of covering one's head an act of mourning? Always? Sometimes? Occasionally? Never? Culturally. Being an Israelite, it would be obviously in their culture. Of course, modern day, not Israel, but modern day Middle Eastern culture still does so. not to cover their head necessarily in that fashion. They usually use dust or dirt upon their head to symbolize the same thing. So what are all the meanings of covering one's head? For example, we have just a few chapters earlier, Tamar. Recall what happened to her with her brother, Amnon. He raped her, which of course disgraces her as far as humiliates her. She's locked out, kicked out. She puts dust upon her head, then she puts her hand over her head and runs off to her other brother, Absalom, who of course protects her. What was that a symbol of? She covered her head with both dirt, but also her hand as well. Yes, Ellie.
When you cover your head with dirt, and if you've never done it, you ought to try it. It is like grief to the death. It's like burying yourself. It is saying to God, I am worthy of nothing but death, or I am grieved to my death. When the ninth of Av comes up, if you've never tried it, you ought to go out and do it. Because it's really something. It's really hard to get the dirt out of your hair, too.
Dirt tends to stick around sometimes, like sand. So was David disgraced at this point in time? We discussed mourning, right? If that state of mourning or losing one's son, in manner of speaking, or losing one's kingship, was it a disgraceful act? Was he ashamed? The reason I'm asking that is because in Numbers, chapter 5, when a woman is accused of being unfaithful to her husband, what must she go through? She must be presented by the high priest to God, in front of God. This is not, you know, some public affair necessarily, but God sees her. She must uncover her head so where God may see her and judge her. And, of course, take this drink of dirt and water and cursed little ink, on, I don't know what they all used, and drink it, of course, and pronounce a curse upon her. The act of uncovering the woman, is that different, or covering or uncovering a woman, is that different than covering or uncovering a man? Ted, that is. Are they treated differently or are they treated the same? Say it again, I didn't hear you.
Almost the opposite.
But see, if you cover a man's head, in many places in the Bible, not all, it is an act of shame. If, on the other hand, you cover a woman's head, in many places, but not all, it is an act of honor. And the flip is true. If you uncover a man's head, or he is uncovered, in many places but not all, it's an act of honor. If you uncover a woman's head, it is an act of dishonor. Let's go to some places and read these. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, it's interesting because I was just asking my husband this on the way here.
Oh.
So no offense, please, but so why is it that in so many of our congregations, the men are wearing the keepers and the women aren't wearing a head covering? Mm-hmm. Why
well,
is that?
That's going to be hopefully part of our discussion today. This is not going to be a 2 Samuel only discussion. We'll discuss as much as we can in the time slot I've got, and hopefully we'll get a greater answer to that question. The Bible is not definitive. So straight off the bat, it is not definitive. It does not say, thou shalt do X, Y, and Z. It doesn't say that. It says, you should do X over here, but then let's not do X over here. And then let's do X over here again, and then let's not do X. That's not definitive. That is changing. Confusing. Why would the Bible do that? Well, we'll try to find out the answers as to why, if we can. 1st place we're going to go to. This is, let's go to Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 14. Many of us know this section, this particular book or chapter fairly well for other for a variety of reasons, actually. But this is like a section of Jeremiah 14 we're covering. This is in verse, the right page here. Verse 1 through 4. The word of the Lord came to Jeremiah concerning the droughts. Judah mourns and her gates languish. They mourn for the land, and the cry of Jerusalem has gone up. Their nobles have sent their young lads for water. They went to the cisterns and found no water. They then returned with their vessels empty. They were ashamed and confounded and covered their heads. Because the ground is parched, for there was no rain in the land, the plowmen were ashamed and they covered their heads. There's a few more places, not just here in Jeremiah. Let's go to actually, no, we're not going to go there just yet. I'll have that minute. So, in Jeremiah, does it appear that when you cover a... No, great, these are men. These are not children, necessarily, but these are men, males. Not women, not wives, males. Does it appear that the covering of one's head is an act of shame? Well, so far, in the case of David, when he has his head covered, he's praying to God, he is in mourning state. He is indicating to whoever he is praying to, of course our Creator, that I am dishonored. I am shamed. Well, Jeremiah here seems to increase or add to that. You are shamed before the person who you are presenting yourself to with your head covered. This is not a simple answer. It's a complicated one, which is why we're doing this. To just double check or verify that David was in fact feeling shame, let's go to Isaiah chapter 20. Because though David was doing more than just having his head covered and praying, he was also barefoot. Isaiah 20. In the year that Tartan came to Ashdod, when Sargon the king of Assyria sent him and fought against Ashdod and took it, at the same time the Lord spoke to Isaiah the son of Amos, saying, "Go, remove the sackcloth from your body, take off your sandals." And he did, so walking naked and barefoot. The Lord said, "Just as my servant Isaiah has walked naked and barefoot for 3 years, for a sign and a wonder against Egypt and Ethiopia, so shall the king of Assyria lead away the Egyptians as prisoners and the Ethiopians as captives, young and old, naked and barefoot, with their buttocks uncovered, to the shame of Egypt. Then they shall be afraid and ashamed of Ethiopia, their expectation, and Egypt to their glory. And the inhabitants of this territory will say in that day, 'Surely is our expectation, wherever we flee for help to be delivered from the king of Assyria, how shall we escape?'" Now that indicates that clearly being barefoot, being naked, and being ashamed are all tied together. Well, David, being barefoot and head covered, and of course tacked with Jeremiah, is all tied together as equally being shamed or ashamed or being embarrassed before God. Let's go to Moses. Oh, sorry, no, him. Let's go to Moses real quick. This is in Exodus. Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3. Exodus 3, starting in verse 1. So Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock back to back of the desert, and came to Horeb, the mount of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire in the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn." So the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. He said, here I am. He said, do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. Moreover, he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. Now, we just read in the case of Isaiah and the case of David, and David, of course, walking on holy ground as well, we're talking Mount of Olives of all places, that taking off one's feet, or sorry, barefoot, taking off sandals, is an act of shame or disgrace. Tied to, of course, David's mourning, tied to his head covering, tied to Jeremiah's confirming the head covering being an act of shame. And we have here that God is ordering Moses to be barefoot, which is, as we've discussed so far and verified with Isaiah, is a part of an act of being shamed or disgraced. And on top of that, Moses being in the desert, was his head most likely already covered? Well, yeah, you're in the desert. You better believe your head's covered, else you're going to lose water and probably die for the days through. So his head was already covered, and yet Moses continued to cover his face. Why? Because he was fearful. Well, fear and shame, as far as the Hebrew is concerned, are tied together. They're very, very similar to one another. So being fearful of something, you wish to hide. You wish to conceal yourself. Well, as we all have known, whoever had children, that children are embarrassed, then what do? They hide. It's part of our natural God-given instinct. I am ashamed. I wish to conceal myself so no one sees me. If I am reprimanded at work by my boss, and anybody else can see or hear, your natural instinct is, I don't want to be seen. I don't want anybody to look. I want them all to look away. I wish to hide. It's built in us. God built that in us, to desire to hide. So when I am shamed, or we're shamed, what do? Well, pretend you're a little child, as my daughter does many times, and covers her eyes so no one can see her. It's an act of embarrassment, an act of shame. Or your head covers some part of you. Moses has done this. Jeremiah points out, obviously some individuals there did it. David did it. David's daughter did it. It's an act of shame. Yes, Spirin.
Is your daughter ashamed to be your daughter?
No comment. Yes, David.
Adam and Eve, when they
were shamed
from the tree, they were ashamed and hid from God.
Exactly, which that's the next place I'm going to go. Thank you very much for introducing that. This is Genesis chapter 3. This is a metaphorical shame, if I use this term, as best I can. We're not going to read the entire section. It's Genesis chapter 3, starting in verse... where is it? 14. Oh, by the way, this is, of course, after God already discussed, found them both, said what happened, they explained what was going on, so now this is God's pronouncement of his a penalty, a curse. So starting verse 14 of Genesis chapter 3. So the Lord God said to the serpent, because you have done this, you are accursed more than all cattle, more than every beast of the field, on your belly shall go, and you shall eat dust all the days of your life. I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and he shall bruise his heel. So the woman, he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Then, of course, Adam said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife, and have eaten from the tree which I commanded, you shall not eat of it. Curse the ground for your sake, and toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you. And you shall eat the herb of the field. In your sweat of your face you shall eat the bread, till you return to the ground for out of it you were taken. For dust you are, and dust you shall return. We'll stop there for a moment. In this instance, do you see someone being head being covered at all? No. Do you see barefooted at all? No. So why would I read here? Simple. Note, what is over Eve? Her husband. What is the serpent eat? Dust. What does the man become? Dust. So what's over her? Dust. Dirt. Dirt is over her. Her husband is over her. Her husband, God says, you came from dirt, you returned to dirt. Serpent, you will eat dirt. Eat dirt is over you. She is shamed by God's curse to have dirt or her head covered by her husband. Now, why would I say that? Because that's what the apostles say. Woman, is not your husband over you? Yes. That's what they commanded. Why? Because of this. They actually refer to Adam and Eve. He is your head. He is still over you. So these are the places, not all of them, but at least some of them, where covering one's head is a curse, shame, fear, disgraced act. Bearing one's foot, same principle. Are all these applications mean that covering one's head or bearing one's feet is always an act of shame? Is that always the case across the Bible? I just gave you, what, 4 or 5 different citations that says it is? Yes, Ellie.
Can that also mean humility?
Hopefully. We'll discuss that in a moment. To humble oneself before another can also result in covering or uncovering your head. That is a, for lack of a better term, a Greek philosophy in many ways. In that when, way back when, not today of course, if you went to an individual's place of worship that was not your own personal belief or God, you would make sure your head is uncovered to indicate to that individual and that temple that that God of this temple is over you. That it is over you. You would, to uncover your head, sorry, that's what it would mean. To leave your head covered would indicate, while you go into this unholy place, that whatever lives here is not over me. You notice in our current Western culture, it used to be, when you entered somebody's home, you would immediately remove your hat. Indicate the God of this house is over me. Well, if the God of this house happens to be a pagan God, no thank you. I'll keep my hat on. That's and it's very, very common in Western culture. We adapt it from the Greek culture, which I'm not sure where they actually got it from. I don't have an answer for that one because I don't study Greek per se. But so to uncover, cover one's head, it means other things in different cultures, which David points out, is this a cultural thing, this covering or uncovering one's head? In many ways, it is. Cultures affect what it means. Yes, Carmel.
The Moses taking his sandals off because it was holy ground isn't necessarily a negative.
Ah, that's what we're going to find out.
That was more,
it's a command.
It was a command, but it wasn't a negative or through fear or shame.
I purposely want to discuss that. It does appear what God commanded him to do so. Well, it's holy ground. Okay, I'll take my shoes off because maybe my shoes are dirty. Well, I'm standing on dirt. That's a little confusing, but okay. So why would God command Moses to do the act or use the symbols of covering one's head and face and taking one's shoes off, which are acts of shame as far as Isaiah and Jeremiah are concerned? Why would God command Moses to do those things? Mind you, God uses symbols all the time. That's how he functions. That's how he communicates. Yes, Jeff.
Is it related to the command to have a special covering of the head for the priesthood?
That's where we go to next. Thank you. I was hoping someone would get there. Lead-ins are very helpful. Thank you, guys. Okay, so go to Exodus. We'll go for 39. Now, this is not all the details. We're going to also go to Leviticus 10, but we're at Exodus 39 for now. Let me get there real quick here. Because this is also a command by God, which that seems, if we already have one instance of God commanding someone to do what seems to be a shameful act, why would he do so? Well, Exodus 39 continues this command inputs. 39 verse 27, there it is, okay. This is an example, or just a quick topic, which adds to it in Leviticus 10. They made tunics artistically woven of fine linen for Aaron and his sons, a turban of fine linen, exquisite hats, which means actually caps of fine linen, short trousers of fine linen, a sash of fine linen, blue, purple, scarlet thread, woven as Lord commanded Moses, and made the entire plate of the holy crown pure gold, wrote in it inscription like the engraving of a signet, holiness to the Lord. that tied to the cord, fastened above the turban, as the Lord had commanded Moses. This outfit that is described, it contains a turban for the high priest, as well as caps, as two items that are used for Aaron and his sons. So the priesthood is given hats to wear. When did they wear these hats? Sorry, a little louder, I didn't hear you. Was it? In the tabernacle? Did they ever take them off? Other than when you're sleeping, of course. Not the tabernacle. There's also something added to that. Leviticus chapter 10. Leviticus 10. Let's see if we get here real quick here. What verse it was. Other page. Ah, Leviticus 10, starting in verse, or just a quick verse, actually. Verse 6 here. Okay, to do a quick background, Aaron just lost both two of his two oldest sons for offering profane fire. And see, verse 6. And Moses said to Aaron and to Eleazar and Itamar, his sons, "Do not uncover your heads, nor tear your clothes, lest you die, and wrath come upon all the people. But let your brethren, the whole house of Israel, bewail the burning which the Lord has kindled." Now, in this instance, we have the example from Exodus 39 that says they have given hats, they are given little caps. And in Leviticus 10, in mourning, you do not take them off because you are priests. Doesn't that seem contradictory? We have scenarios over and over and over again that says covering one's head, being barefoot, is an example of shame. And yet God is commanding, ordering Moses, be barefoot, and of course Moses instinctively, like all of us would, cover his own head and face. He commands all of his priests, "You will have your head covered," which it appears, even during mourning time, while you're grieving. Is he actually doing a service at this moment in time? No. He may have been a few minutes earlier, a few minutes later, but he's not doing right now, but he's not to take his hat off. What was it? Say it a little louder.
He's under commission.
He's under commission. He does have a status position to be in at this moment in time for a continuing period of time. His sons do it well as well, of course. So none of them are allowed to do so. So we have a scenario that's showing up that it's adding complexity to our problem, our conundrum here. We have, Jeff.
Perhaps maybe an exploration of what the meaning of ashamed or shame itself means.
Shame, as far as the root word in Hebrew, which is... I wrote that down. Okay, I can't pronounce it, but I'll write it up for you. For those of you who can. It's a chai... Sorry, hey, I don't pronounce Hebrew words. Pei. And... Well, it's a little bit confusing, but... This is the word, it's a combination of word for cover and to shame. So they're actually tied together. Final, I'm not sure what letter that is. Oh, well, I'll just write up and, my Hebrew is not that good. I apologize for those of you who are far better than I am. Oh, well. Is it pie or play or poo or something like that? It's a weird word. I don't quite get how it's pronounced. What was that? I don't know. I just thought, I'll write it down. I don't know my Hebrew letters. That's just what it looks like. Forgive me. It means to pervert, to invert, to alter, to shame, or to a disgrace. It's translated differently, in English that is, depending on different letter editions. You add a vav to it, add a yod. It changes for who's doing what or what it all means. That is to cover or to conceal. It is designed and used in a form of "I do not wish to be seen" fashion. David used it's used at Strong 7 something 18. I forgot what it was. There's another word too, but I can't remember what the other one is. Go ahead.
Are you going to go to 1 Corinthians 11?
We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there. No cheating, David. We're discussing what the Tanakh says first. I use that as my base authority for anything, because the Tanakh is usually pretty darn good at it. So, adding to our complexities here. So we have this sense of shame. Now, granted, Are these instances, with the exception of one that I referred to with Eve, with this symbolic dust, or tomorrow with actual physical dust, is there a difference in covering someone's head with an object, like a hat, versus covering one's head with dirt or ashes? I'll say it again a little louder.
Job.
Job did it. Job chapter 1 and 2 discuss this. We're not going to go there today. Job covered himself with dirt and ashes. Tamar covered herself with dirt and ashes. Let's see, a few others did too. Actually, many, many people covered themselves with dirt and ashes. We'll cover all of them. There's, you know, close to 100 of them. Near every instance which dirt and ash is put upon your face or put upon your head, it has been used as an act of worse than shame. Worse than embarrassment, more of, I am worthless. Not quite repentance. An act of, what was that again, Laura?
Ruin.
I'm ruined. There is nothing left, nothing of value left in me, as my elder put it under, to bury me, an act of burial almost. That's the act of it. Is that the same as putting a hat on your head? No, it's not. Not quite the same thing. An act of ruin is far more extreme than an act of, I'm embarrassed, or I've been shamed or disgraced. There's a difference. I mean, humiliated versus ruined. Ruined is, I have no longer any value left in me in my future life. Please, God, end it now. Yes, Brian.
Did the people of Nineveh also put
yes,
in their head?
Yes, they did. Jonah did as well.
Them? Yeah.
Yes. They had dust or dirt on their heads and face. Haman, for the Book of Esther, he didn't put dirt on his face. Boo! Yes, we all have Book of Esther. Boo, Haman. Now, Haman, did he believe in our God? Maybe. Who cares? I don't know what he believed in. When he was embarrassed in front of Mordecai, this is Esther chapter 6, in front of Mordecai, after he had to parade Mordecai around with the horse and all around the town and say, this is what the king does for the something, I forgot the phrase, doesn't really matter. He finishes his task and, of course, runs home with his head covered. Humiliated. Now, he's running through the streets, by the way, running home to his wife. Humiliated, and now he didn't cover his head during the process of displaying Mordecai, but did after he was already completed. Humiliated and ran back to his wife, and she said, he's Jewish, you've been to fall, you're doomed, just quit now, which he didn't adhere to. He was an act of humiliation. This is just another example of somebody who was ruined, or somebody who was humiliated. He did not put dust on his head, as Tamar did, or as symbolically Eve did, or actually I think some of David's own people did the same thing, or Ahushai, David's advisor, put dust on his head as, I have no longer have value left in me. But he covered it, as David covered it, as Tamar covered it in with her hand, as Moses covered his face. So we have examples, or there's just an additional example, of humiliation, of embarrassment, not of worthlessness, of ruin, as Kathy pointed out. That's more of a dust covering. So dust and ash is a different symbol than a hat. That's my argument. But dust or ash in your head is a more extreme example than a hat over your head. So why would God do this? What would be God's objective? To order, by command, the priests to put a hat on the head. And have it on while they're in commission, while you're doing services. Whether you're physically killing something at that moment in time or not, if you're doing something on God's behalf, your head was covered. If you're sleeping, don't worry about it. That's a separate issue. Kathy.
And face, since your face is part of the head.
Panim or what was the head? Rosh, thank you. No, so simple. Panim is face in particular. Rosh is head. You can, in Moses' instance, he said he covered his face in shame, as my daughter does or my son does, they cover the face in shame. They also bury their head in the couch, that's a separate issue. Moses already had, by definition of what he was doing, his head was already covered. Now, I wish to point out, you have a great point there, because in Exodus 34, Moses, after he just goes and talks to God for a really long time, and now his face is glowing, he covers his face, which is also, isn't the same thing he did with God? Oh, cover my face. He sees the people. Moses then covers his face. Well, they're both covering faces. Is that the same thing? Is it? It was a little bit different, wasn't it? Now, see, in the case of covering one's face and covering one's head, they can be similar, but they can also be different depending on the circumstance. In Moses' case in chapter 34 of Exodus, when he covers his face to conceal it from the people, he does so because their fear. Funny, he covered his face from God because of his own fear. It's still a protection.
Human nature.
To
cover our faces or our head in humility and despair, whatever.
It is.
But the commission that Jeff was talking about, sorry, that was appointed by God. So it wasn't out of their own nature that they did that. They were doing it out of obedience to God because He is their head.
Yes. So what's God symbolically trying to tell them? If God uses a symbol, and he's using it over and over and over again in different circumstances and results in different things. One by command, and by the way, I personally believe God thoroughly inspired the majority of the text. I realize there's human error in here as well, but still God inspired it. So the examples that God used with Moses, as well as the example with Eve, and even Rebecca when she covered her face before Isaac, these symbols are showing up many, many times. So what's God's objective when he's trying to say, okay, priesthood, I wish you should use these same symbols, granted, different services, I'm ordering you to, you're doing it out of fear and respect for me, use these same symbols to mean something. That's a very good potential segue, yes. Thank you, Tammy, for the word, segue. That was the right word. Go to, where is it? Just wrote this down. Ah, 1 Kings 19. 1 Kings chapter 19. This is an example of someone wishing to communicate with God and God not speaking to them until their face is covered. Which you already discussed faces, which add to it and add to this face idea. This is chapter 19, verse... Oh, I just lost the page. Where is it? Verse 13. Now, this is Elijah. He's fled from... I forgot the king's name, doesn't matter. He's fled from the in this cave in somewhere down in the southern Negev, the desert territory area. And he's just describing a series of events that are occurring before him. Actually, we'll start in verse... start in verse... verse 9. We'll start in verse 9. Excuse me. So this is 1 Kings chapter 9, verse 9. Chapter 19, verse 9. And there he went, referring to Elijah, and spent the night in that place. Behold, the word of the Lord came and said, Elijah, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I have been very zealous for the Lord of God of hosts. The children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. He said, go out, stand on the mountain before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great strong wind tore into the mountains, and broke the rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. After the fire, still small voice. So it was, when Elijah heard that voice, he wrapped his face in his mantle, went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And suddenly, a voice came to him and said, Elijah, what are you doing? He said, I have been very zealous for the Lord of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life. The Lord said, go, return on your way in the wilderness of Damascus. And when you have arrived, anoint Hazael as king over Syria. I'm not going to read all this. Not the rest of it is not terribly important. Elijah heard a still small voice, and he wrapped his head around in his mantle. He covered his face and, of course, his head at the same time, because you cover both, obviously, by the nature of doing so. And God communicates with him. to give them further instruction. Details, you will now go do this. This is the answer to your problem. And of course, his answer was, well, I think there's 7,000? Verse 18, yeah, I have reserved 7,000 of Israel, whose knees have not bowed to Baal, every mouth that will not, has not kissed him. So God's reaffirming to Elijah, you've covered your face out of concealment or hiding. Moses had to cover his face to conceal it from God, and he had to cover his face to conceal the people from Moses. So an act of concealing or hiding, Elijah was attempting to flee or conceal himself. Well, it just so happens in the book of John. A similar event happens, though it looks a little bit different. We are all learning together. Hopefully this will go out well. John chapter 20. Now, after this wonderful event of the resurrection of Messiah, or sorry, the death of Messiah, not the resurrection quite yet, the disciples, they were following Messiah, they were thrilled and happy until, of course, he dies. Oops. But he didn't think that was supposed to happen. So he dies, and now they're all a little confused. The death of the Messiah was supposed to be the most triumphal, perfect moment of Messiah's life. Hardest thing he'll ever do. Hardest thing we could never do. That was supposed to be the moment which they said, we now won. Yet what was the reaction? To hide themselves. Humiliation. To conceal oneself. This is John chapter 20, verse 19 and also 15:26. So, see. Then the same day at evening, being the day of the week when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for the fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in the midst of them and said, "Peace be with you." Now when he said this, he showed them his hands, his side. His disciples were glad when they saw the Lord. Now, continue on in verse 26. And after 8 days, disciples were again inside, concealing themselves, and Thomas with them. Then Jesus came to the doors, saying, being shut, and stood in the midst and said, "Peace unto you." Both in verse 19 and verse 26, the disciples were concealed and doors shut. And verse 19 explains why. They were ashamed or fearful of the Jews. See, being fear and shame is pretty much the same thing as far as the Bible's concerned. I should say Greek, because Greek doesn't do it quite that way. But they are very similar. So we have an act of fear, which I guess goes along with the same lines of act of shame. If you're ashamed of something, are you not fearful at the same time? Well, yeah, shame and fear are hand in hand. You can't have shame and not be afraid. Because being fearful makes you want to hide. Well, being ashamed makes you want to hide. So both the same emotion inside of us that God built us with. So these men are ashamed of people and desire to conceal themselves. Just as Moses desired to conceal himself. Just as Elijah decided to conceal himself, to conceal himself from the people who were trying to kill him. God reassured Moses, God reassured Elijah. God, of course, here reassures his disciples that it's okay. You have no reason to be ashamed. But God had ordered the high priests, the priesthood, to use these symbols. Why? What's he trying to tell them? What's he trying to tell us? Next verse here. As David requested, 1 Corinthians 11. We have additional stuff here. More information. First Corinthians chapter 11. Imitate me, just as I also imitate Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions that I deliver them to you. But I want you to know the head of every man is Christ, the head of every woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head. Let's stop there for a second. Was David praying while he was fleeing from God? Well, yeah, he was. So his head was covered too. Was he dishonoring his head? Yeah, in a sense, he was. This, as a coin said, anybody who discovers his head during praying or prophesying dishonors his head. So David, having his head covered, was praying right before where the temple is going to be. The tent was there. He dishonors his head. Is dishonor a bad thing? Well, it depends. If God ordered it, it's not. Keep going. But every woman, verse 5, who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. For that is one the same as if her head were shaved. So if she prays, now granted, so now we see that in Corinthians, unlike the other places which you've read in the Tanakh, they're distinguishing a difference between what it means to a male versus what it means on a female. Well, we actually saw that. We saw that the woman and man were acted differently in the Tanakh in some ways. The woman, it wasn't a curse, but it was commanded by God that Eve have her head covered by her husband. Her head is covered in a form of dust. They're using symbols, of course, the same principle. Tamar had her head by her hand covered, which was a disgrace, until she reached Absalom. And Absalom uncovered her head and said, now you are protected by me. You're now my daughter. So Absalom took her cover and became her covering, which was a restored honor to her. So we actually have two instances of women in the Tanakh who actually have their head covered by and also being an honorable thing. Well, that's consistent with what Apostle Paul just said there. A woman, if she goes before God, praying, prophesying, has head has to be covered. It is an honor to her. Verse 7, for a man indeed ought not cover his head, since he is the image of the glory of God. But the woman is the glory of man. For man was not from the woman, but woman is from the man. Nor was man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. For this reason, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority or have authority on her head because of the angels. Because they have a symbol over their head. God being over their head. So, yeah, I'm going to get the words right. Messiah is over their head too. They're servants of the Messiah. Nevertheless, neither the man is independent of the woman, nor woman independent of the man in the Lord. For as the woman was from the man, even so the man is also is through the woman, but all things are from God. Judge among yourselves. Is it proper for a woman to pray to God with her head uncovered? Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man has long hair, it's a dishonor? But to a woman, if it's long hair, it's a glory to her. For hair is given to her as glory for covering. Now, he's using the example of nature, natural events outside, to indicate that, it's an obvious example, a man with long hair is a dishonor, a female with long hair is an honor. He's using that as a real-life natural example of what he's trying to say here in the act of prayer or prophesying. So what have I said so far? Besides get myself in a little bit of trouble with some people. Yes, Kathy.
It's interesting to me because the way you're describing it, it sounds like he's talking about a covering.
A tallit.
And then it?
It
talks about the hair being the covering.
Which looks like a tallit.
And I would submit to you the possibility, in
go
fact,
ahead.
Through some research, that I don't know if I can do this quick enough. Caesar Augustus, I believe, was the emperor at that time. I believe I might.
I
it was.
Remember. I don't
it
remember.
Was a Caesar.
It was a Caesar. Yes, I don't know which one. One of
okay,
Caesars.
And he had it in his mind that he wanted to be the father of morality. He ended up having a daughter that was very, very wild, and she was running with a group. And he put into law that women, especially in religious sects, house churches, whatever, that the women had to have a head covering. And he had messengers, which if you interpret messengers in there, it could be interpreted angels.
Could be.
But he had messengers that were sent out to check these meetings to see if the women had their heads covered. And they would take the corner of their garment and put it at the top of their heads. And it was symbolism of this morality and the family, the importance of the family that he wanted to be remembered for. And those messengers would go back to him and report. And if the woman didn't have her head covered, she would actually be taken from the meeting and disciplined for that. And that's history.
I will take your word for it. I have absolutely no clue.
And that answers for me that he's talking about more physical, like the hair, and not so much having... I mean, it says right there, it puts it more in context.
It's conceivable. To me, personal opinion, of course, is that if something's going to be timeline specific, and that it is an event that's occurring at the time, a secular event, a Gentile event, it's occurring at a time which a scenario is happening, then that event, as far as the Bible's laws regarding it, will also be time specific. For example, the concept of taxes. Well, taxes weren't really around until kings started showing up. Well, then you have laws concerning taxes. They're timeline specific. Prior to that, the laws did exist. You have other examples of a similar nature. I'm not going to discuss all of them. Even the laws of kings in general that way. So if the scenario is that when a woman presents herself before God or is in a church setting or some kind of a setting of that nature, that is referring to a law that a Caesar produced, then it should be confined or theoretically confined to that general time period. In general, that would make sense. Now, if that's the instance, if that's the case, then we shouldn't have an instance of a woman with a head being covered presenting herself to her new master or a new authority being condoned or accepted or desired or wished or commanded in any way, shape, or form prior to that. And we don't, except we do have customs that do show up. In the case of Rebecca and Isaac. Now, Rebecca travels from Laban's house with Abraham's servant. Now, it appears during the entire traveling time period, she was not covered. She remained uncovered. Why? She had no husband. That's not a law. She's still a father. Father's over her. When the servant met Rebecca, was she covered up? Well, apparently not, because she had a whole bunch of rings all over her face. I imagine if she was covered up, you probably couldn't access such items. But during her travel from Laban all the way back to Abraham, or actually Isaac in particular, she remained uncovered until she saw a young man coming. Young's relative, of course. She asked, who is this man from a distance? Said, this is my master. She covered herself up. That act is, first of all, Christ, she dismounts from the camel, then covers herself up to present herself covered before Isaac. Isaac looks upon her, takes her, says, you are now mine as a covered bride. Now, why wasn't she covered the whole time? Because she is under someone else's protection. The servant of Abraham. He is, using the term very, very loosely, her guardian, her cousin, her husband, her covering. He covers her with all of his tools, equipment, war equipment he has to. She belongs to him. He purchased her. Yes, I know the money came from Abraham, technically, yes, but Abraham wasn't physically there. The servant was the one who did it. He bought her. So she comes and presents herself to her new master, her new lord, her Isaac, covered. And Isaac then takes her, brings her into his mother's tent, and of course she becomes his wife, which she is no longer covered. Once she is accepted by Isaac, she is no longer covered. Meaning, she doesn't have a wrapped thing around her. For example, when my wife or you go to your husband's, for whatever reason, do you come to him with your body's, your head, your face covered to speak to him? Well, of course not. Why would you do that? That'd be silly. You sleep in the same bed. That's an absurd act. Because you don't do it. Well, people are people. We've always been the same. So Rebecca, after she's been accepted by Isaac, and that also includes, of course, Jacob and his two wives, Leah and Rachel, who were covered until they went into the bedchamber. Then they were now uncovered, and he now revealed who they were. The covering, or presenting yourself covered before your master, lord, husband, granted all the words are interchangeable as far as the Torah is concerned, is an act of honor. It's an honorable act. It glorifies her covering. Well, that's similar to what Apostle Paul actually referred to. It is. Yes, Tammy. I'm going to conclude in a few minutes with
I was reading lines. Something like with 1 Corinthians 11 specifically. I think sometimes we pluck this a little bit out of context.
We do.
This is in a letter.
You're right. It is in a letter.
And in the earlier part of, I think it might be verse chapter 9 or chapter 10, he mentions that he hears from Chloe, basically the mistress of this house church,
right,
that they're arguing over who they became baptized by or who they came into the belief through. Oh, I'm of Apollo or I'm of Cephas,
right,
I'm of Paul,
right,
blah, blah, blah. And he says, basically, cut it out. You know, and he says, and then he, like what you quoted there at the beginning of chapter 11, he says, you know, that, you know, many of you imitate me insofar as I imitate Christ. And then he goes through this whole thing about the headship and this and that, but he ultimately says, you know, that God is the head of Christ, Christ is the head of man.
Right.
So he's basically, in a sense, reprimanding the men of this congregation who are arguing about who their teacher was, who brought them into the faith. It's like, are you of Paul, Cephas, whoever? Did any of them were any of them crucified for you? Did any of them die for you? No, Messiah died for you. He is your head, not Paul, not Cephas, not anyone else. So why are you bragging or arguing about who your head is when the only head or that you should be bragging about is the Messiah who died for you?
You're absolutely right. That there's a large percentage of a few of the chapters there. He does, however, very specifically refer to when you're praying and prophesying. So he's using an example within inside the context of that greater argument. The example doesn't invalidate. He then continues to support it throughout the next few chapters, in that same chapter. He adds to it in chapter 14 afterward, discussing more details of how a head and a wife-husband relationship is supposed to function within inside the setting of a church organization. Yes, Ellie.
Chapter 11, Corinthians, verse 4. Every man praying or prophesying, having his head covered, dishonors his head.
Right.
Okay, that puts the priests in the tabernacle dishonoring their head? I don't get it.
That's what I want to talk about. Yes.
That's the comment here. Because in Greek, what it says in verse 4 is someone who prophesies kata kephalos, which means against his head. Because that follows from verse 3, which says, you know, they're talking about that the head of every man is Christ, the head of a wife is her husband, the head of Christ is God. Now, that follows the second one, the next verse after that says, whoever prophesies against his head.
Right.
That's translated as with his head.
His
head covered.
There is addition to that. Again, the head covering, the Greek word there refers to head being down. So you could say that it's against one's head. But it's actually against the head being down. Not like your head bowed down, but your head is brought low. Earlier on. This is earlier up in the text. Not quite referring to hair yet.
Because actually what it follows here is it talks about prophesies against his head, then that you have another kata, because kata is a preposition that usually means against or according to. But in the case of something that's possessive, means against. So it takes it in the next phrase, it's kata is kinai, which is ashamed or shames.
Shames.
So basically, literally saying anyone who prophesies, prays or prophesies against his head,
shames his head, right?
Which is follows directly from the verse before it, which is talking about who's head over whom.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about following from the discussion previously in the previous chapters, the discussion of whose authority is under whom, that seems to follow. Because the words that are used throughout the rest of the of chapter 11 are different words.
They are different words.
They're different words. When it used covered, they're not all the same Greek
words.
No,
they're not the same words. Hebrew has the words more consistent. Greek jumps around a little bit. That actually ties very well into what I wish to conclude with. Note, I'm talking up here regarding a head covered. You know, is my head covered? Yes, it is. Why is my head still covered if I'm arguing, or appears to argue, that the head should not be covered by males? No longer hair. Well, that may be the case. Might be a little bald up top. We're going to discuss that. Bad hair day. I'm not saying, by any stretch of the imagination, that a male should never have their head covered. Quite the opposite. I'm giving you examples in the Torah, in the Bible, Tanakh, where head covering, and that's why I focused the talk more so than I did Corinthians so much, that head covering is a form of shame in many ways. The Tanakh argues that. In almost every example, but not all, that argues a fact of shame. So, as I believe Carmel brought up, could it be an act of humiliation? A humbling oneself? Submission, possibly? Well, I have a question for you, which I want to conclude this. When you pray, who do you pray to? God. Who is in His presence? Is He your husband? A little louder. I didn't quite hear you. Gonna be. He's your groom, isn't He? Prior to Messiah's birth, death, resurrection, did any human on earth know, that they had a groom in the form of a son of God? They may have thought it, argued it, believed it, no one knew. So when the priesthood is commanded to humble yourself before your Father, your Creator, and the Moses is commanded to, in it, symbolically, humble yourself before your Father and Creator. Granted, it's an angel speaking to him, the same principle. Why are you humbling yourself? Because what is supposed to be over you isn't there yet. You see, the deal is, as Jeff and Tammy beautifully argued out, thank you very much for both of that, continuing on in chapter 14, which I referred to, which I didn't actually read, but referred to, it discusses a very bizarre scenario, which we've talked in the past a number of times. That somehow this woman and her husband, is she supposed to ask him questions, and she's not supposed to be speaking, she's supposed to be silent in churches, and blah, blah, blah. It's really confusing, seems odd. Well, you see, she's supposed to be requiring something and presenting herself to her husband, is she not? And what's his job? To know or go get the answer. If she doesn't do that, she doesn't ask him. And instead, she goes around him and says, okay, husband, you know, enjoy your meal. Rabbi, priest, teacher, whatever, God, answers the question for me. Did her husband have to do any work? No. Was her husband covering her? Meaning, did he take care of her? No. So, he is a failed husband. So, back with the priesthood. Back with Moses. Back with the women, with Eve and Tamar and David. When their heads covered a face of mourning, they have no longer, or they never did have, a husband over them. No one to plead their case before God, as we are instructed and given example of in every instance from the beginning of Genesis through Revelations, that women and men and how they're supposed to function. They don't know him yet. So, what is the hat symbolic of?
A wedding veil.
A wedding veil. It's symbolic because you are not in the priesthood, is not praying to Messiah. They're praying to God the Father. They don't know it. You can look at the temple structure itself. Clearly it's built around God the Father, not the Messiah being sitting in the mercy seat. God the Father is sitting there. They're praying before God and presenting themselves before God with a covering over their heads, symbolic of Yeshua. So Messiah is supposed to be over their head. Messiah is supposed to be functional above and take care of their needs. Does not it command us to pray in His name? Well, yeah. Okay, God, I'm praying in His name physically. An example of what I'm supposed to spiritually be doing. This little hat is. So when God is commanding them to do so, in a form of covering their heads, and come before you with your head covered, you will not uncover your head for even for mourning, you will never take Messiah off your head and say, God, I don't need him. I don't need the hat. You don't do that. You make sure he stays over you at all times. Does that apply to male or female? Well, it's a funny thing that even though Corinthians 11 actually point out, in God there's neither male or female in the Lord. So, male. This form of disgrace, I'm going to use that term, Messiah, is to humble yourself, disgrace yourself, ashamed yourself, be brought low before God, because you, husband, your husband, has not married you yet, but he's still going to. Doesn't matter if you're male or female. Praise God, so there's no difference. Does that make sense? I went about this a rather difficult way. I did it on purpose. So I want you to see all the places the Tanakh talks about this. And how being humiliated or being humbled before the Father is a good thing. Not a negative thing. To have your head concealed or covered is a good thing. Not a negative thing. It's something which symbolically says, Messiah will cover my head. I'm not married yet, but I will be. If I go into a pagan temple, do I uncover my head in honor of their God? You better believe I don't. That's craziness. That's saying, God, Messiah, I am no longer married to you. I'm no longer betrothed to you. You don't want to do that.
I don't know if I'm dense or I'm just confused. So the bottom line on women again is what?
Okay, let's read this word this again. Yeah, no kidding, that's true. Okay, the concept of covering one's head is an act of humiliation. We already discussed that in Shame to Shame. Act of shame and humiliation are not necessarily bad things. They're good things when God's symbolically using them to mean something else. We told you to do it. What we've discussed here is all the place where it says it's shame and shame and shame and shame and act of shame and act of shame and act of shame, God says, that's good. Well, why do I want to be shamed, God? Because that means your husband is supposed to come before me on your behalf. You better be shamed beneath me, child, daughter, son, because your husband, the Messiah, is supposed to come before me on your behalf. So you are concealed. You are covered by your husband over your head. This hat on our head is our husband, the Messiah. Does that make sense, hopefully? No? Yes, Damon.
Is the yarmulke the symbol that the Jewish people use, you know, and that when they go to the synagogue?
Yes.
That symbol of being humbled and shamed before God.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
It is a disgrace to do this. Take your hat off. Why? They don't believe Messiah. But they know that they are not worthy and that somebody has to cover them. Yes, Jeff.
Well, you know, one of the things that we get, such as, you know, meeting in a place like this, it's kind of like the synagogues, such like having a Torah ark and such like that, was in the first few centuries or so, right around the first century, was this idea that to take what was there in the tabernacle and bring that Exodus 19 to fulfillment, in that the priesthood of all the people and some of the symbols,
they would all act the same way.
All the people would come out, and such are the things that related to kippahs, and things that you see that are priesthood only became applied out into the general population.
That's how they used it.
Yes.
That's how they taught them children, taught their grandchildren, taught their wives or husbands. That's how they all taught. Is that bringing all those symbols the priests only did into their homes. The whole concept of, you know, the kiddush we do, the lighting of the candles. Well, you don't do that outside the temple. Well, yes, we do. Look. But we all can see it now. This has the same thing. Yes, Ellie.
In the Song of Songs, taken out from the translation of the allegory from Rashi, it says, "And doing so, I am before him a bride found most perfect."
Yes.
And that's back a ways, and he is not messianic. But he understands the concept that if I do those right things and I come before him, I am before him as a bride most perfect.
In also the Song of Psalms, it discusses that when she is before her husband, she's able to rest her head into his loving, protecting hands. Left hand to hold her dearly. That she is... It is a song about a symbol that we attempt to replicate with our hats. Is this hat actually physically the Messiah? Of course not. It's a symbol. Yes, Tammy.
And the thing is that other than the templates that God gave Moses to for the priests, you know, turban like the holy unto the Lord, and
right,
it had to be a specific color and blah blah blah. There's no template in the entire Tanakh for how regular people are supposed to cover their heads, male or female.
No, it does not discuss it. Not talked about at all. I would suspect the only real covering that was probably most common was desert-style covering. You look outside the modern-day nomads. Well, modern-day, that's relatively speaking. But they're not really modern. But the nomad, what do they cover their heads with? Well, blankets, towels, wrap, whatever, because you're in the hot sun. Most likely women and men probably wore similar things than they still like to do today. They still cover their heads. So that would already have been done to that extent. The only description we have as far as the type of head to cover for a priest is a cap of some form, whether it was round, square, triangle, I don't care. It was a cap. Plus a turban. Those are the only two items. And it was made of linen, typically, because that's what it was ordered for. But nothing else is discussed about that. So does God care what your hat looks like? No. Does it matter to... You're not priests. Guess what? Tamar had a hand on her head, didn't she? Yeah. Something is over you. It doesn't matter what it looks like.
Even a cowboy hat?
I won't argue that one. No comments on the cowboy hat.
Napkin.
No. The geckos. Aren't they geckos? Yeah, they're geckos. The geckos on his little cap. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to speak necessarily to God's personal preference. Maybe he doesn't like the color, the bright color of gecko. I don't care. I don't speak for God's desires and what he likes to see, he doesn't like to see. But as far as if he doesn't describe it, it probably wasn't important enough to do or worry about. If it was, he would do something. He would say something. Yeah, exactly. He discusses hats and head coverings and covering one's head in humiliation form, but it's a humiliation before him. And guess what? Did you notice? Every instance that had a head covering in the form of humiliation was good and right, and that person deserved to have their head humiliated before him. Did you see any perfect person cover their head before God? No. There were no perfect people.
No such thing.
No such thing, exactly. All of them did something that required their head to be covered. What do you mean, Moses? Well, yes, Moses. He killed an Egyptian on his own accord and got away with it. That's murder. His head was to be covered. He was unworthy or humiliated or embarrassed before God. you better be embarrassed before me. You try to do something that only I'm allowed to do. Yes, Ellie.
As somebody who stays covered under prayer or even dancing, and if I'm not covered in prayer or something, I'm extremely agitated and very uncomfortable. And I've done it, I don't know how many years. It is a personal thing.
It is.
And it's something that if a person decides they don't want to do that, that's fine. If they do want to do it, that's fine. But it's something you work out in prayer yourself. And you ask God about it. And then when he makes it fit for me, I can't not be covered. I couldn't tell you why. I just can't. And then you do that. But if you don't know or understand, then don't do it until you come to the point that you do, if you ever do. That's up to a person.
I was not born with a hat on my head. I just wasn't. Without ceasing. That's very true. That's very true. Always have your head covered. Admittedly.
No, I'm just pointing it out.
Yeah.
It's probably where a lot of the holiness movement is from.
Uncover their head. Of course. Of course. Which means your head should be covered throughout the day, theoretically speaking. Right. And note, I was having this discussion with my wife earlier this morning. I had a hard time with this. Which, how do I present this? How do I discuss this? Because I was getting myself confused over and over again. That this seems bizarre. It sounds strange. So, well, if I pray with my head uncovered like this. For some reason, every time I do it, I feel naked. Because does God want to see my nakedness? No. He says, specifically, do not show me your nakedness. I do not wish to see it. Thank you very much. I don't care how I made you. I don't want to see it. So, I may have gone about this in an unusual manner, but I hope that you're able to follow how I did it and why I did it. Though the Bible says things may be humiliating, maybe embarrassing for us, maybe disgraceful to us, we shouldn't do them, right? No, that's not the case. God may want you to feel disgrace, to feel humiliation, to feel embarrassment. If you don't, are you bold for yourself or for Him? If you feel no embarrassment, no shame, you're bold for yourself. We are all to be shamed at home before Him. Have a wonderful, blessed remaining Shabbat.